This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest is Bojan Lewis, and he's a member of the Navajo Nation. He currently resides in Spain at the moment, and he'll tell us about it, but for here and now, we'll have an opening poem. Bojan.
Baptism for the dead. Don't take my name to the water. A soul with no body to enter. The dead don't share skin with the living. No conduit between. Don't set me in afterlife. My name is my body.
The lyricism of Bojan Lewis. And I'll tell you a little bit about him. His book, Currents, is coming out from Bookmark Press. And he is the author of a chapbook that is nonfiction. It's called Troubleshooting Silence in Arizona. You've had fiction produced, and you are the poetry editor of Red Ink, which we'll go into a little bit later. First of all, what is Troubleshooting Silence in Arizona about?
It's an extension of a panel talk I gave for the Indigenous Caucus in Chicago, 2012. And a friend, colleague of mine, started Guillotine Press and wanted to produce, I guess, a radical nonfiction.
Well, what is the theme? What is the content of this radical nonfiction?
So it's about the banning of books by the Tucson School District by Indigenous and Chicano authors. So it was a reflection on that. And at the time, I was working as an electrician. So I was kind of seeing this happen sort of at an academic level, but also as at a working class level.
Did it reach a readership?
I think so, yeah.
This is so important for poets to speak. And so I'm so glad that's out. Is it still available?
Yeah, you can find it at some independent bookstores. You can go to the Guillotine website and order it.
It sounds like it's worth reading now more than ever before. So let's get to know you more through your poetry. So would you read us another poem? His name is Bojan Lewis. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress.
Okay, this is a poem called Breach. Its setting is Sitka, Alaska, and this is the first section. Its years have been recovered. Parents gone the way of worms. Mom alone, her own decision. Dad, how he was always asphyxiated until rolled over. The frontier I'm abandoned to, exposed root rib cages above ground, rained on so much there's no dust, no blow away, traceless surfaces. With a single bag and one-way ticket, I rented the first found available. Three-bedroom, living, kitchen, dining. Filled it with myself. Every room empty except where I slept. Girls I had over, kissed to the floor, left sobered mostly. Offered other times at their places later. I accepted, then abandoned, fixed at the clinic. This high north, though not freezing, an island settlement cut off the coast, pine, spruce, and chaotic undergrowth rise up along the crescent of mountains, open toward the ocean. Rain more sky than the sky is sky. I'm not home, less interested in finding it, hours from the mainland.
So that's section one of a three-part poem. And why is it written in Alaska?
It's set in Alaska.
In Alaska.
I often write a couple years removed from whatever I was going through or wherever I was. So I'll write some notes in the moment, but then I feel like it's like reading a book very close to your face. You can't see it, so I need some distance.
I have to remark on the way that your form holds your art, and you're a very lyrical person, and you're a lyrical poet. I don't think we can be different poets from the way we are as people.
Yeah.
Then how did you know to embody these into tercets, into three-line stanzas? What do you think happened in your head to know to do three lines and then to put some space? What do you think How did you massage that?
I think I've always been obsessed with threes, so the book deals with a lot of religious references, a lot of musical references, so the Holy Trinity, and then like tritones, and that's how you build a chord. And also, I've been an electrician for a number of years, so a basic circuit is a hot, a ground, and a neutral, so...
I am so glad I asked. Let's go to the next section.
Okay.
This is Sitka. This is in Sitka, Alaska.
Yes.
Section 2 of Breach.
On an outlying island, red deer wait out hunters, tracking steam for rifle crack. Otters cut away supine through water to humans hypothermic. The turned engine skiff on sucking mud signals the wasted day's done. Across the still cobalt inlet, carrions line the bald rim of a sundowner volcano. Glaciers imagined against the sea heaven horizon melt when fog lifts and missed shots echo, fade into the tree line, the casings mimic pebbles. Anger defines me here, in what's seen in pictures as pristine beauty, untouched by man's dirty finger. Dad's belched regrets, mom's frustrated, unspoken hurt. I want recompense, solitude, and forgiveness's distance. Nourishment sought, sighted, and put down.
We now have section 2 is your interior life, where section 1 was more of a landscape.
Yeah.
And how did you remember, did you take images and jot them down and then just compile this later? Because these fragments were assembled.
Yeah, it took me a long time to write this book, mainly because I would write in fragments. And during that time, I was living in Alaska and working as a sort of a construction apprentice, framing houses or doing concrete or do a little bit of drywall. Digging holes to, make footings for houses or.
And yet you spoke like an angel. You're digging ditches and you're putting posts and you can write like this.
Well, I was lived in solitude. Well, I lived with a roommate and friend, but all I did was read books and go running and work 14 hours a day.
Well, then then we all should do that.
Yeah,
we can wind up writing poetry like this. And you go into yourself then here, talking about your mother and your father. So what shifted that from the exterior world? What made you then turn inward in the poem?
For me, there's a chorus of voices happening through the book and even in this poem. These are all characters. So at some points, I'm imagining myself as my parents. So the interior actually of section 2 is me imagining sort of my parents' mindset with their parents, but living in my situation. So, stacking it in that sort of like imagination and imagery.
Bojan Lewis at the Library of Congress. Let us hear the final part of the suite.
Okay. Where welding fails, release hollers out the soon-to-be empty space. A continent, a levee, what rises, takes. Ice given heat, like a child spread, with hands telling, quiet. Ocean hefted over stern, deflates my ill posture. Gone life drunk, so drowned in drink, nobody wants to want me. Rarer dad shouted out by moms, get, don't feed us, sink, be eaten. Jonah's a lucky guy, bowel held and undigested. Dumb animal him, swallowed entire, in warmer water. I don't believe he escaped. He's down in there still, hung from the beast's spine, feet eaten, body untouched.
What I wish to say about this poem is it has a sadness, a tone of sadness, but it is not depressing.
Oh,
now,
good.
How do you write about sadness without really being a downer? That's very interesting, I think, because the tone, it's the word choice, I think. And the weather, it even has Alaskan weather.
Sure.
It's kind of a soft note poem.
Yeah. Well, when I was living in Alaska, I left as it was like getting really cold and dark, and I was like, this isn't for me. I'm from the Arizona desert. I need sunshine. But I suppose how I navigate this sadness and depression and you know,
I don't say depression.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's depression. What I feel when I come through these.
It's
but like
beautiful elegy of a time of your life. Mm-hmm. So we're at the Library of Congress, and we are talking to Bojan Lewis. Tell me what an International Journal of Indigenous Literature, Art, and Humanities journal is. What is it that it makes it indigenous?
So this is a journal that was started by Simon J. Ortiz many years ago and then transferred to the University of Arizona where it lived for a while, and then I guess some funding things happened. So in the past few years, Simon and I and a bunch of other people have worked to move it to ASU, rebranded the name, reimagined the journal. So what we try to do is create a space, a journal for indigenous voices, so indigenous around the world, so like Navajo, Apaches, Sami tribe in Northern Europe. So
tell
everyone.
Me what being a member of the Navajo Nation means.
It's sort of a, I guess, both a cultural and a political sort of title or name. So,
but what makes you a member of the Navajo Nation? Birth? Ancestry?
Yeah, birth, ancestry. Also, the political aspect is a blood quantum, so a certificate of Indian blood, which, is like how the government kept track of us. Or,
right.
You know.
You have a lot to say. You have a lot of people to publish. You have you have some things to say.
Yeah.
And let's hear them. Bojan Lewis, this is the Library of Congress.
This poem is called K'ontoshleshche. Which,
say that again. That is so beautiful.
I might be even messing up the pronunciation. So, which means fire and ashes in Navajo or Diné, which I loosely speak. So, the red off the far ridge, an eating dragon slow coming down the valley. My mom's imagination over the phone, a quarter mile of cars ahead. No one has stopped on their way north or south to capture hot shots turning the beast to smolder. Somewhere out in the burn, under dusk, a rattler den unfurls fast as brush fire and clenches against the inferno draft that blocks entrance and escape. For an instant, or minutes maybe, their unnatural warmth is a comfort beneath the ablaze final day. It's the shape I'm in. I don't tell her that I will leave days from this moment, the high, dry mountain we drive towards for the ashes of a different monster.
What I see is what you have, you may not even know. And that is, you can use geography, and then you populate it with someone, and then you give them a state of being, an emotional state of being, and then there's almost a mystery in it. And you do that with poem after poem.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And so let's hear another and see if I'm right.
Okay, let's try it. Red dirt. I work to be more than roots fed through days of heat and dust, evaporating into a brittle husk, withdrawn and left as only remains. Whether stirred out by force or removed in mechanic iron swoops, I'm simple. Passed over and dumped onto a pile of old ground, turned up, open to the air. Bound in earth pack, I release seeds, my blood to be wind-blown and spread. Straining from new foundation, I reach to hold all else, settled, empty of breath.
So you are connected to the land very much, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, landscapes have always been important to me, and in Diné culture and tradition, we are supposed to exist or return to at some point, four sacred mountains. So, do offerings to them, or you know, they you know represent certain aspects of the life cycle. So,
but do you think? I think this is a double whammy poem, because you say red dirt. You don't want to remain only that.
Right.
You mean this is sacred. You are part of this. You came from this. Your seed is from this. But you don't want to be only that. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a riff on, like, you know, the idea of being, like, red skin, which is, a you know, a derogatory term, but nobody seems to agree. So
marginalized.
Yeah, exactly.
And because you hold such idealistic and lofty ideas and beliefs, then that should not be disparaged, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot goes on in those little, you have about 5 stanzas there. You got a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah. This is a.
We are with Bojan Lewis, and he lives in Spain.
Currently, yes.
How did that happen?
Well, my wife and I were working as full-time instructors at Arizona State University, and you know, we were doing well, but we thought before we get too old or before we have kids, we should, you know, sort of take a risk and do this fellowship as language assistants.
Is it fabulous?
It's hard.
No, but Spain itself, though.
Yeah.
Living there.
Yeah. Living there and doing the things is fabulous.
But come home to us.
Yeah. But
come home to
us. Yeah, of course. But being like a, I guess, a sort of immigrant or foreigner, of course, it can be hard. So my fluency in Spanish is you know, maybe 50%.
Identity is very important to you.
Yeah.
And so when you go to a foreign country, then there is another challenge, another problem with identity.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, you know, other cultures, and, you know, the further away you go, you are the trope. You are only what they're able to see, possibly in media or the little, you know, histories that they get. So,
do they have an idea of what a Navajo nation is?
No.
And you weren't able to partake of that because you had a circumscribed thing you had to do there?
I mean, I can introduce them to it,
yeah.
But it's still just, it's a
mention.
It's almost a fantastic thing, you know?
Yes, for that culture to understand.
Sure,
it's hard for us to understand.
Exactly, yeah.
And you have to keep working for everyone, don't you?
Yeah.
For understanding.
Yeah.
Now I would like you to take a poem and to read it to us.
Okay.
And then to tear it apart and imagine where you were when you got the idea and how you processed it and where you got the image. And just let us get into your mind and write the poem with you. So which poem would you like to do?
This poem called The Occasion to Wake Wind. And it's in 3 small sections, of course. So 1. Struck cold by morning sun, the decomposed crumble and rows of upturned earth. Failures given to the toiler, who keeps earning less than promised. Drought these months, unfed tributaries, nourishment tilled dirt. None of it's right. Work, now, disappeared. 2. He stick frames nightmares after spring and warmth into a house he'll never own. One mansion, mosaic. Inside, what assaults him is abstracted. Mother serving rusted pennies, jagged from reckless use. Screams, though the edges aren't real. Only piss relieves sweat. 3. All he does is plan how to move quick, not rush to the place where his people are sent. A moonless, sunless pitch burning fast and heavy, dried fields, heat waves blurring memory and trauma of seasons, when thirst was a silence, kept only to crack.
We would like very much to know where you were when you got the idea and how you started composing that poem, and take us through the poem and tell us what it means.
Okay, so this was a few years ago, maybe 5 more. I just ended a significant relationship in Philadelphia and had moved back to Phoenix, Arizona, and started working as an electrician again. And in Phoenix, you got to get up at 3 or 4 in the morning to get started before it gets too hot in winter, or in summer, excuse me. And I was also dealing with, you know, the emotional letdown of all that and the stress and anxiety and also night terrors that I've had since a child from experiencing years of trauma. And so I was just trying to figure out, like, how I could feel calmer, how I could sleep better, and how to process, you know, all this emotional stuff that I was going through. And it was this landscape that came to me, and these places, and also writing in a form and adhering to the form no matter what, through 10 drafts, following the syllables, the metrics, the rhyme schemes, and then letting it sit. And then returning to it, you know, sometimes months later, or it would be a week. I don't know. It just, whenever it felt right, I suppose.
I have to give you a bit of praise because I didn't even know of the metrics. It was that smooth. Usually it's rocking chair rhythm,
right.
But it is that embedded in your words that I didn't even know. That is really metrical.
Yeah.
And so what does it mean, this poem?
That's kind of... So I have nightmares of this house, this huge house, and I know that I'm not supposed to go in certain rooms, but then, like, if I'm about to have a night terror, I go into the room, and it's just like, you know, whatever nightmares are made of. A lot of it had to do with wind, and there's a, you know, in our creation story, the hero twins go to, you know, slay the monster, but, like, the wind is just sort of destroying everything. So that, you know, the occasion to wake wind is my own demons coming to...
Oh, the, like, title, the title of the poem.
Yeah, yeah. So there's, you know, currents, so wind currents, electrical currents, water currents, you know, currents of, like, nightmares running through your head.
Well, if there's anything such as transcendence... You turned nightmares into art. Isn't that comforting?
Yeah, now it is. Yeah. I mean, I'm so far removed from this now. It's like,
but
oh, I can.
If there's not, if there's magic in the world, if there is anything called magic, it is taking pain and turning it into beauty. I mean, I'll never get over it. I'm amazed every time.
Sure.
Every time.
Sure.
And so anything else you'd like to tell us about this poem? So it's the big house. I thought you said you were a builder, that you were building a big house you could never go into. But here it turns out that the big house is a symbol in your dream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's also quite literal because I would never live in a huge house.
Yeah, I like that. A house I built that I will never live in.
Yeah. Right? And then when you build houses, of course, you often build things that are beyond maybe your taste or own means. And you're like, this is just a waste of space. And
you know,
resources.
That is worth its own poem.
Yeah.
Because to lift that idea out, because that's a very important poem.
Yeah.
We are at the Library of Congress. I couldn't be happier than to meet Bojan Lewis. And so let us hear another poem.
So I'll read, like, the first of another triptych. These are more, I guess, political in nature, but again, utilize form and voice. So, if nothing, the land. One. The toughest sheriff in the world. There is no other bad than what I say is bad. It's tough living on this land, miles of desert, undeveloped. The interstates, mostly unmanned, are threads unspooled down broad hallways. Beyond their edge, the space is dead. A rogue trailer or redskin reservation. Backward problems of methamphetamine and rape. Those doors have their own police, their own dumb justice. I concern my posse with invasion, paperless beaners, rust that ruins a polish. Inedible animals do no man any good until buried to cease the flies and stink.
Hmm. What's the happiest you've ever been about your poetry?
The happiest. Happiest?
What did somebody say that really made you so glad?
I had a friend that said they're just jarring and edgy, but lyrically sound. So.
And you remember that?
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know.
And when was cool. The first time you knew that you understood the world through language?
Maybe during my undergrad, I had a notion of it.
Not as a child?
No, not as a child. I think
I'm surprised.
I wanted to be a scientist or a rock star.
Well, there's still time. Hey,
yeah,
you're a looker. There's still time. Are you a musician?
Yeah. And going back to the other poem, I think that's how I break the rocking chair as music is like another swing time is 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So
I got the music. I got the music. Yeah. And what do you think poetry does?
You know, for me, I think it's a thing that heals. It's like writing can heal. And when I do teach, that's in my pedagogy. Like writing is a way to process this mess of thoughts that's going on in your head. And when you write it down, it's like emptying a dumpster, right? And then sifting through all that to find, oh, why did I throw this away? Or, oh, I need this. Or these things can go together. And then you get rid of the rest of it. So it's a process. Like you have to, you know, empty your mind because, you know, trauma, stress, anything that you'd go that happens to you throughout your day, you got to get rid of it somehow.
Well, that's a very Buddhist way. There's a lot about the Native American, which is Buddhist also. And the Buddhist is that clearing the desk before you get the next thought with meditation.
Right.
But we are so glad to meet you, and we would love a final poem.
Okay. This one is called Electricity. The morning roundups, a current leaking to earth without interruption or fault. Above busted streetlights, the sun buzzes to a cuffed line of deportees, the sheriff's imbalanced authority.
Mm.
Any laborer gathered for a tear out agrees the pleasure of opening walls is the view of what's no longer behind. The restrained motion of a body caught within a fence run between language is a union of shock and memory.
Shock and memory makes poetry. That is the voice of Bojan Lewis, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding for the program is provided by the Witterbinner Foundation for Poetry, the Reva and David Logan Foundation, and Friends of Poetry, Hiram LaRue, Joyce Thompson, and Allison Hedge Koch. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.